Welcome to this very special edition of Don't Miss a Beat, live from Washington, D.C. at the Heart Failure Society of America meeting. I'm with my great friend and colleague and co-host, Dr. Steve Green, and we are talking about the very important topic of implementation science. Steve, you...
Great to see you.
Steve, good to see you in the flesh.
That's right, absolutely.
And you have really been a major champion of the evidence gaps that we've seen that have been so pervasive in care. And you have also contributed greatly to the initial scientific building, the scientific evidence that have supported many of these therapies, but also some of our initial understanding of how to implement these therapies into usual care. So, what is your just overall global vision for implementation science?
Yeah, well, very kind, Mutu. Thank you very much. You know, it's just such to me, this is the elephant in the room with the way academic cardiovascular medicine is, renal metabolic disease. We have all these positive trials that seemingly every scientific meeting we're learning about a new potentially efficacious therapy has great potential, but yet, as we publish over and over and over again, there's such a gap between what is now possible, and it's only increasing with what is possible, but yet the gaps remain the same, and it's really been, you know, stark how stagnant the implementation has been of all these, again, potentially life-saving therapies, particularly when we talk about heart failure. So I think, again, we're now at the point where we need to develop evidence for the actual use of these therapies in the real world, not just the clinical trial efficacy and safety, but how are we actually going to have an evidence base that supports best use to the actual patients we're taking care of in practice.
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly right. And so today we'll specifically discuss implementation science. What is that conceptually? Implementation science is really the dedicated study of strategies that can evaluate approaches to translate the scientific evidence to our patients either at the bedside or in clinic. And this has been something that historically has been largely dedicated to the area of quality improvement and has been locally based. And today we're learning that those approaches, while quite helpful at the local level, may be insufficient and may be too late. And so now we are really learning that these dedicated approaches of implementation science should occur earlier, even in parallel with initial scientific evidence generation, should be structured, prospectively designed, and scalable beyond the local atmosphere and environment in which we practice medicine. And so this is a rapidly evolving space across cardiorenal metabolism. And so we thought it would be a helpful time to bring us together and to discuss some specific strategies. So Steve, what did you have in mind?
So a lot of great studies to choose from, but in the last couple of years, it's really been a lot of these randomized trials looking at implementation strategies. So one that I'll start off with for consideration is the PROMPT-HF study, and this was led by the Yale investigators, Tariq Ahmad, Nihar Desai, and a great team from Yale. And this is the idea of electronic health record alerts. Now, you were mentioning that a lot of times we've had these quality improvement initiatives, and they get empirically implemented, and we don't actually know if they work, and as clinicians, we see these alerts in our practice all the time, and, you know, again, are they worth the squeeze with potential burnout and whatnot? But this was actually testing it in a prospective randomized trial, randomizing 100 healthcare providers that take care of HFrEF patients. Half of the providers got alerts that gave them very specific prescriptive recommendations on GDMT for their patients they were seeing. And the other half of providers, for their patients they were taking care of with HFrEF, did not get any alerts. And the overall results of the study were positive for the primary endpoint of increased use of the GDMT class, so essentially escalation of GDMT within 30 days of randomization. Now, it was a 40% relative risk reduction, about a 7 or 8% absolute benefit with use of the alert. And also, again, not only was it effective in increasing absolute use of GDMT, relative use of GDMT, the clinicians actually liked it. It was very well received. It was not overly taxing, overly burdensome. So it really gave a, you know, really in a prospective randomized trial way, to justify using such an alert to actually improve quality of care. What were your thoughts on Prompt HF?
No, it's a wonderful design and a wonderful trial, and of course the results were quite positive. And you know, when I first saw Prompt HF, I immediately thought, well, how did this trial, or at least how the conduct of the trial, how did they overcome the inherent alert fatigue that we see with EHR-based interventions? And I think that they've done so in a clever manner. First, they engaged the right clinicians, the clinicians that are interested, engaged with heart failure care. And so they may be primed to actually respond favorably to such EHR-based reminders. The second is, I thought the design of the actual prompt was quite smart. They had several design elements that pre-screened patients, and so you weren't offered a generic prompt for all patients with heart failure, but was really tailored to the patient you were seeing. That type of approach is really critical, and I think helps overcome the process. The third was that it was paired with an action, and that is critical. Suggestions are helpful. Paired action items in terms of EHR implementation is critical. And so when an order screen pops up after that reminder, that helps drive care. And I think that this is really a wonderful example. So tell me, are there other implementation strategies that have caught your eye in terms of that are helping improve cardiorenal metabolism?
So another strategy that I think also is getting increasingly attention thanks to one study is the idea of patient activation. So we as clinicians, you know, we think that we are in charge 100% of making every recommendation for a patient's medication, the quality of care, and yes, it's certainly what we go to school and what I go to training for. But having patients be educated on the kind of quality of care they should expect, you know, has also been now tested in what's called the EPIC-HF trial. So the EPIC-HF trial builds on what we know are education gaps and familiarity with heart failure patients with GDMT. We did a study out of Duke, for example, that sent a national survey to heart failure patients. 3 out of 4 of the patients had never heard of an MRA or spironolactone or any of the names, had not heard of ARNI. And again, there's also data that show that patients overestimate their expected life expectancy. So again, there's clear patient education gap, but now EPIC-HF was the idea of targeting that patient education gap with an implementation strategy to actually improve GDMT patients received. So this was done at the University of Colorado. Larry Allen, who's an implementation expert, led this study. And they randomized just under 300 patients, 1-to-1, and half the patients got prior to an outpatient clinic visit, they were sent a 1-page checklist and a 3-minute education video about GDMT and about the importance of being on specific medications that we all recommend. The other half did not get any preemptive contact before their outpatient clinic visit. The endpoint was, well, were there any changes in GDMT in the 30 days after that clinic visit? The patients that got the patient activation checklist and video leading up to their clinic visit had a 49% rate of improving their GDMT with the clinic visit, whereas usual care was only 30%. So again, kind of prepping, priming the patient before that clinic visit really was shown here for them to get the most out of it in terms of their GDMT.
Yes. No, I 100% agree, and I thought it was a very clever, innovative strategy and one that, fortunately, we've really insufficiently engaged previously across cardiorenal metabolism. In general, I think it shines a spotlight on the issue of patient advocacy as a major gap currently in cardiorenal metabolism, especially for very high-risk entities like heart failure. The other aspects are, again, why was this strategy helpful in this particular trial? And so we need to take forth those learnings. So EPIC-HF, a relatively seamless delivery scheme. So they were able to electronically communicate these messages. So it allows for a scalable intervention. Second, it was a reinforced intervention. And so there were reminders leading up to the clinic visit. And perhaps most importantly, they tied this type of patient engagement at the time of clinic visit. And so it was pertinent to care, and it helped drive near-term changes in care. So wonderfully executed, and opens a whole host of avenues for new implementation science approaches.
I mean, we're always talking about nudges in implementation, right? And about nudges, whether it's an electronic health alert, or in this type, Epic HF, is having the patient nudge the clinician. So targeting the patient education gap, that developed the nudge for the clinician and actually improved outcomes, or improved GDMT, excuse me, in that study. But Mutu, I know there's a lot of other avenues to explore in implementation science. So what are your other different strategies that we haven't talked about yet?
Many, many others. You know, I'd like to spend just a moment on combination therapies. And in many chronic illnesses, we've learned over decades that because of the multiple pathophysiological processes at play, using drugs in combinations is an important strategy. And this is true whether it is hypertension, diabetes, heart failure, chronic kidney disease, and obesity. What we have also learned is that maybe these drugs, given individually and over a long-term horizon, may be an ineffective strategy because of loss in adherence over time and complexity of pill burden. And so there is increasing interest around polypill strategies or combining individual therapies together to help optimize long-term adherence and use at the patient level. And we've seen really great examples across cardiorenal metabolism, and I'd like to just quickly highlight a few that are, I think, particularly interesting and engaging. We've seen long-standing experiences that this is an effective approach in hypertension, diabetes, where combining pills, even and offering clinicians with multiple different choices of different combinations, helps to promote overall chronic illness care and adherence. So here we have, in, for instance, obesity medicine. We're now seeing that the use of obesity therapies is with a GLP-1 receptor backbone. We're seeing targeting parallel incretin systems is a potentially additive strategy. And these are being really cleverly designed trials. Some are even active control against a GLP-1 receptor agonist. I think is the state of the art of how we test combinations. The combo drug versus standard of care, which is defined by definition as the therapy, one of the therapies that is has the greatest evidence in that given space. We're also seeing the same in heart failure and chronic kidney disease, where we're seeing the wonderful pair of an SGLT2 inhibitor and an inhibitor of the mineralocorticoid receptor system can be effectively paired when given individually. But what if they were combined in the same pill? And now trials are underway, phase 2, phase 3 trials in heart failure, chronic kidney disease, to investigate if this combination is superior to a strategy of an SGLT2 inhibitor alone, even in populations where we have less substantial evidence, for instance, in severe chronic kidney disease or in heart failure with relatively mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction. So really exciting new developments around polypill strategies. And I just want to, in our closing moments, I'd like to call attention to some trials that are actually combining more than one or two drugs. And in fact, our close friend, Ambrish Pandey from the University of Texas Southwestern, is conducting an NIH-funded trial of about 150 patients who were randomized to a combination of an SGLT2 inhibitor, 3 doses of a beta blocker, and a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, compared with standard of care, and are following patients over a near-term horizon for an MRI-based endpoint of structural changes and functional changes in LV function, also collecting a host of other important endpoints. So I think that this is, we are slowly seeing progress now that these foundational therapies have been developed. It is such an exciting time to now look forward at how we can optimize use and care.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that polypill, you know, we're talking about now our 4 pillars for HFrEF, quadruple therapy. Low doses of all four is priority number one for our HFrEF patients. Really lends itself to seeing if some of those polypill strategies that work for other disease states really now seem like a perfect fit for heart failure. And I'm glad Dr. Pandey is doing a great job leading that study. Really looking forward to those results. But in any case, we've covered a great deal of implementation studies and science, and I think the field is really so energized, I think. And now that we have clinical trial after clinical trial, seems like almost every meeting we're having another positive trial in the cardiorenal metabolic space. Now there is potential evidence-based strategies on the horizon to try to move the needle, get these diseases better and better control, get the therapies our patients need to the bedside.
And just a plug to our early career and in training audience and listeners, Steve, I hope you agree. I think this is perhaps one of the most exciting and expanding spaces across cardiorenal metabolism. So whether you are, regardless of your individual discipline or specialty of interest, the actual investment in time and training to understand some of the methods, the trial designs, and the actual individual strategies for implementation is of great, great priority. And so we strongly encourage that type of training pathway.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, again, this is becoming front and center of everything that we're doing, talking about these conferences. So again, trying to make an investment in a career opportunity, implementation science seems like a good investment. But in any case, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. Again, it was so great to be with you in person, Muthu. Great here at the HFSA. There's great energy here in Washington, D.C. And for this episode and all others, you can find it on practicalcardiology.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Take care, everyone.